Hello and welcome to episode 3 of the Roy Harper podcast for November 2007. In this episode, lots of news about the Stormcock reissue and also about what's turned up in the current Mojo magazine. We'll have an interview with Pete Herring and Steve Lambert from Australia, part 1 of 2. The A to Z of Harper will cover C. We'll have some listener feedback, some actual feedback this time. And of course, we'll have a pretty wide-ranging selection of music as well. So starting off with Mojo, the December 2007 issue has got a lot of stuff in there about Led Zeppelin, which isn't surprising given the forthcoming gig at the O2 Arena, which has actually been pushed back by a couple of weeks, but that's another story. There is a 6-page article all about Roy at the end of the Zepp stuff, and I think this is wonderful news. And Phil Alexander, if you're listening, I really appreciate the fact that you're putting the effort in to cover Roy, both in the Mojo magazine but also on your radio station. Well played, mate. I really, really think it's a good thing. He deserves more coverage in the media, and I think he's sadly underrepresented in that area. Anyway, 6 pages. It's the usual kind of background to Roy and history and so on. Some really nice photos in there, some of which we've seen before, some of which we haven't. There's also a little inset written by Jimmy Page about Stormcock, and I'll just quote a bit for you. It says, "When you hear the whole of Stormcock now, and you haven't listened to it in a while, you realise just how brilliant, important and unique Roy was and still is. We didn't have anyone else like that at the time. We had some really fine acoustic guitar players and singers, but we didn't have too many other people that were making music in those epic proportions, and I'm not sure we do now." That's a nice thing. So if you're into Mojo magazine, if you buy it occasionally, I'd definitely get the December issue. Now, of course, one of the reasons for the article in Mojo is the reissue of Stormcock, and I was excited beyond belief to get my copy through the door a couple of weeks ago. And in fact, the post office conspired against me because I knew it had been sent several days before, and it didn't turn up, and then other people reported getting their copies, and I was getting quite twitchy, really. And speaking of somebody that's now in his 40s, I really shouldn't be getting too excited about stuff that comes through the post anymore, I don't think. But, well, you know, this was a special case for me. I've been looking forward to it for so long. In terms of packaging, what you get is a kind of bookbound affair with a number of pages in there, and with the CD as a wallet that's inside the book. So it's no longer a classic CD case. It's more of a book that you read that contains the music CD, and I think it's a really nice form factor. Roy's put a lot of work into the content of the book. There's lots of new pictures in there. There's stuff written about each of the tracks in the form of prose. There's a brand new poem at the end that kind of, I think, encapsulates some of the concepts of the album as a whole. And there's an explanation of the circumstances of the making of the record and so on and so forth. Really nice thing to dip into when you're listening to Stormcock, and I think that this is something that is sadly lacking from the CD format, and even more, digital downloads. You pay your money, you get your MP3s, you whack them into iTunes or whatever, but you haven't got anything to look at. You've got possibly a small square of graphic, which is the album cover, but you don't have anything else. And maybe it's just me, but I love reading all that kind of stuff and looking at the lyrics, reading the lyrics for the first few times when I've got a new album to listen to, and it's all part of the experience, really. Maybe I'm just harkening back to the old days of vinyl and, you know, getting the old gatefold sleeve out and the Pink Floyd albums and everything else, and just, you know, fully immersing yourself into the whole experience. And I miss that. So I like what Roy's done with the Stormcock reissue, and, you know, the CD is very good. Now, on to the audio content. Well, it's been remastered, and we mentioned that in the last podcast, and the fact that some people have been a bit worried that he might sort of radically change the nature of the album. Well, I'm happy to report that's not the case. It's had a jolly good clean-up. It sounds just more in your face somehow. There's more going on. The music, you can hear more of what was there that was hidden inside the mix in the old CD issue. I haven't compared it directly to a vinyl, to be honest, but the only vinyl I've got is the Awareness reissue anyway, so I don't know how it compares to an original Harvest vinyl. But having said that, I listened to it on headphones, first of all, and I could hear a lot of interesting stuff in the stereo mix, and there's some nice trickery with things sort of moving from one side to another, and things like the vocal harmonies really work well, and they're sort of pin sharp in the mix, if you like, and pin sharp in the stereo soundstage as well. Perhaps I'm getting a bit Anoraki here, I don't know, maybe. They are, the bottom end of the track, some of the sort of lower bass notes on the guitar are very clear, and there were instances, I think, in the original mix where there was so much going on that it became a bit of a sort of mess, and I think that's been fixed well as well. I think a lot of care has gone into this. Which leads me on, really, to the first feature of this podcast, which is what I've decided to call Anorak Corner. This may become a regular feature of the podcast in the future, depending on how many other Anoraks are out there. What I'm going to do is play a few seconds from the original recording of Same Old Rock, and then the same few seconds from the reissue, and then you can see if you can hear the difference. Obviously, if you're playing this on tinny little computer speakers, you probably won't, but what the hell, it's worth a try. Here we go. And this is the new version. Well, there we are. That was a pretty silly and contrived example, and you do need to listen to the whole album to get a good feel for what the remastering has done, but trust me, it really is worth it. Now, this is the Stormcock reissue podcast, really. It's a big event, I think, and it would be tempting to play complete tracks from Stormcock on the podcast. But being a contrary person, I've decided to take a completely alternative approach, and I've picked a couple of live versions of some of the two of the four tracks from the album to play in the podcast. And the first one I've chosen is from the Beyond the Door DVD. In fact, it's from the audio CD that accompanies that. And it's a blistering version of One Man Rock and Roll Band.
Well, Johnny Soda. Welcome back, the coast is clear. Welcome home, the war is over. They treat you here just like they treat you there. You know, with a one man, a rock and roll band, on a very last one night stand. Rocking the bone and I'm rolling the note on which your friend Cardinal Doom's taking last. Toes on your knuckles, they were all so very pleased to see you there. Don't you think you should have taken Granddad and his medals? Played a different game, grown up square.
It's almost impossible to follow that. What a fantastic version. I really, really like that. So I think I'll just head straight on into the interview now. This is going to be split up into two parts. We had such a really good time and a long chat. It went on for about 50 minutes or so. And I kind of decided that was just too long for one podcast. So what I'm going to do is do the first part this time, and the second part will come out in December, which also means I don't have to go scrabbling around for another interviewee for another month or so. I guess that prompts me to say, if you are interested in being interviewed for the podcast, please get in touch with me, pd@stormcock.net, and we'll sort something out. If nobody does get in touch with me, I will hunt you down. This month we've got a very unusual interview, and we're pushing the bounds of technology a lot further than we've done up to now, because I'm sat in my basement at just after 9 o'clock in the morning in the UK, and my two interviewees are over in Australia, where it's about just after 6 p.m. So we're doing a round-the-world Skype call, so anything can happen in the next half an hour, as they say. But I'd like to introduce to you Mr. Peter Herring and Mr. Steve Lambert, both of whom I originally got to know properly in 2006 at the Clonakilty event, which we'll talk about a bit later on. But to kick things off, Steve and Pete, perhaps you'd like to both sort of introduce yourselves and let us know how you became friends with each other, really.
Well, I'm a native of here. I've lived in Sydney for about 25 years now, originally from the Illawarra district, which is about 50 miles or 80 kilometres south of Sydney. Born in a town called Bulleye, I grew up in a town called Winoona, which is next door to Bulleye, just the adjacent suburb. And been working in Sydney for quite a while, since about 78, so I'm pretty much a Sydney local these days. And I met Steve, must have been in 97, by my partner Mary. Steve and his partner Michelle and daughter Ellie are friends of Mary's. That's how we met. And quickly established that we had quite a bit in common, not just music, but a long way beyond music. That's how we met. And Steve?
Yeah, it was an interesting afternoon, imbibing in lots of beers and wines, and obviously the topic of music came up, and we started throwing the curly questions at each other, and I realised that Peter had a very, very thorough knowledge of the English rock scene of my era. And I threw a curly one in and said, have you heard of Roy Harper at all? Immediately he said, oh, of course, you know. And I was taken aback.
Well, that's very unusual.
Very unusual. And I thought I'd call him out, but it wasn't to be. But it turned out to be a great afternoon, and we've been serious friends for since then.
Well, that's wonderful, actually.
Yeah.
So basically, Paul, the way you can tell us apart is that I sound Australian and Steve still sounds English.
Well, in a way, I do get complaints when I go back home to the deep, dark places in southeast London. But anyway,
well,
I enjoy it out here.
My wife comes from Leicester, actually, but she's been living in London for many years, and she's become, well, I call it civilised. She calls it southernised anyway. But when she goes back home, she comes back again with what I'd call a broad northern accent. Gets very influenced by it. It's quite funny. Okay, next question then. Let's start at the beginning, really. For both of you, how did you initially hear about or hear Roy Harper, and, you know, what did you think about it? Was it one of those things that grabbed you immediately, or did it kind of sneak up on you?
Let's put it this way. We used to, over in Lewisham, there was what I would call a safe house. And all these hippie types would gather around this safe house and generally discuss what was going on and invite topics of new bands and gigs that were happening. And I just got back from the 71 Glasgow affair, and I remembered this band called the Pink Fairies, and I thought, these guys are going to take the place by storm.
Infamous band.
So very, very amazing band. So I'd gone out and got the Never Never Land and tucked that under my arm, went onto the safe house thinking, I'll throw this on the floor and see what happens. So, of course, on it went, and it was well received. And at the end of the evening, the guy that ran this safe house says, can I borrow that Never Neverland, I want to record it. I said, right. Oh, sure. And he said, look, listen to this. And he gave me Stormcock.
Oh.
And I looked at it, and I thought, oh, I've been shortchanged here. I'm into bands, you know. Where's all the gear? You know, there's this fellow with a set of headphones on, and I flipped the open cover, and there was no much to report on the inside sleeve and bird's nest on the back cover anyway. So I took it home and basically filed it, you know. And at that point in time, I'd upgraded my old Pi record player to a Garrard deck, and I bought a set of these huge COS headphones, and generally sort of got into loud music at home via the headphones. Anyway, one day I came out, I must put that Stormcock on, and that was it. I clapped my head around the Stormcock, and that was it. Absolutely unbelievable.
You're a lucky man. You started with the best.
Started with the best, yeah. So, and there it started. I was amazed. And I'd never heard an acoustic guitar recorded in that fashion before, and probably since, actually.
Yeah.
So it was an amazing experience, thanks to the COS headphones.
I remember COS, and I remember the was it Garrard you said? Yeah, I remember.
Garrard SB25 Mark IV, was it? I remember it well. It actually had a 16 RPM speed on it, and we used to, a friend of mine called Tony used to come around, and we used to put Never Neverland on 16 because it lasted long. And it was amazing because it was so fast and furious. You could actually listen to Never Neverland on 16 RPM and actually get off on it. It was really interesting times.
Well, there you go. The youth of today are missing out on that kind of fun, aren't they?
That really lovely 16 RPM was classic. You know, you can play buckled records on it and all that sort of thing. I don't know whatever happened to it. I left it behind many, many years ago, but it was certainly ahead of its time. Anyway, I'll hand you over to Pete.
Well, the first time I became acquainted with Roy, I mean, it's one of those things, I suppose, that in those days, back in the 60s and 70s, of course, there were far fewer bands and artists around than there are now.
Yeah.
And anyone who was really interested in music almost knew who everyone was or had almost heard of everyone. And even if you hadn't directly heard of everyone, they were on the periphery, and there was a likelihood that somebody somewhere would mention them. And so I had heard of Roy, but my interest really was, I suppose I was at that time, having grown through the 50s, I can remember listening to music back as far as 55, 56, believe it or not, on the radio with my mum at home before I even went to school.
Mm.
But having come through to the 70s, I first heard of Roy from a fellow called Steve Parker, hello, Steve, if you're listening, who was a massive fan of Roy and also other left-wing English stuff like Henry Cow and Fred Frith and English jazz like Henry Lowther and people like that, and the sax player Alan Skidmore, all these names that I'm sure are very familiar to a lot of the English people, but nobody in Australia really had heard of those English left-wing obscure players. And Steve was a guy that I met through a record store, a small independent record shop. And speaking of fairies, and I'm not kidding you, this suburb of my hometown was called Fairy Meadow. And
that's
hello,
right,
Tony
nice,
Burke.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yeah. Well, it wasn't bad. Tony Burke used to own the record store, and he just opened this record shop. And I remember going in there, and the first thing that I heard in his record shop was From the Witchwood by the Straubs,
mm-hmm.
with that great opening track, A Glimpse of Heaven. And he had a particularly good set of speakers, and so I really enjoyed that. And so I bought that one that day, and it actually happened to be his own personal copy, which was quite funny.
Yeah.
So he'd only just started the shop, and he was very, very low on stock. But the two or three visits later, I got talking to this other fellow who'd been sitting in the shop every time I'd been in there. His name was Steve Parker, and Steve started telling me about all these obscure English things, and he said, oh, have you heard of Roy Harper? And I said, well, yeah, I've heard of Roy Harper. I haven't actually heard any of his stuff. Mm. And he went back to his place, and he played me Storm Cop. So that was the first one that I heard as well. And,
wow.
And of course, same old rock and all of the other things really did strike me in a very left-wing sort of way. I mean, Roy's out there, really, and I've always thought that and still do.
Yeah.
But the that was the first I heard, and Steve also had these albums. He had Bullen and Ming Vase, and Life Mask actually was out at that time, because this was 73 or 74
yeah.
that I first heard Roy. Yeah, so that's basically the story.
You're both really lucky, actually. It's really interesting you both sort of started off with Stormcock, and you're making me feel really young, so this is great.
Yeah.
Keep it up. Because I started considerably later, and when Stormcock came out, I think I must have been about 6 years old or something. So,
yeah, 71 was an amazing year.
Oh, yeah.
The albums that came out in 71.
Yeah, incredible.
Fast and Furious.
Well, you look at
incredible.
It and you think, how did it happen? Why was it so prolific at that time, and why is it so crappy now, you know? But
I've always thought 71 is actually the culmination of the 60s.
Yeah.
Everything good about the 60s happened in 71, really. It's a classic year.
Interesting point. Yeah, it's kind of like the pinnacle of everything. And people were being so productive. They were sort of writing so yeah. much music and recording, you know, multiple albums per year. I've mentioned this before, actually, but I just don't see quite why we can't still do it, unless it's just the record companies. But maybe we'll get onto that a bit later on. I don't know.
Yeah.
So, okay, you both got into it through Stormcock and the stuff around that time. The next sort of question on the crib list, if you like, is what you actually identify the most with in Roy's music. I mean, you've kind of alluded to it a bit, talking about the acoustic guitar on Stormcock being, you know, pretty unique, and the long songs. What you call the left-wing nature of him, I don't know whether he'd agree with that. I think he kind of considers himself to be in his own political
in
little
his
area.
Own, yeah.
But, I mean, what is it that really does it for you?
Well, what does it for me? I was dabbling in acoustic guitar at the time, but listening to electric guitar bands, the classic guitar, bass and drum combo, and I very rarely heard acoustic guitars recorded in that sort of quality. And it was a question I wanted to ask Roy at Clonard at the Gathering this year, but I thought it might be a bit boring for those that weren't musos, actually. Just given the black and white photo on the front, it seems like it was all just done through microphones.
It looks like
and
it, doesn't it?
It does. And when I listened to it in those days through these headphones, it was almost as if your head was actually inside the thing, as if they'd had a miniature mic put inside the guitar, as they do now. The technology, they do have what they call gooseneck mics, of course, for those that know about it, and that they can capture the sort of sounds you hear if you play acoustic guitar, put your ear to it. And it's a really cavernous sort of sound, and they managed to trap it in those days. I always admired the way Pete Townsend could capture the acoustic guitar and sort of just strumming lightly behind his raucous electric stuff.
Yeah.
And it was always very crisp, and they'd done a great job on those recordings too. But Roy's work really set the standard for me, and to this day I would love to know how it was done. I'm sure the notes are there somewhere. That might become a topic for a later discussion too.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. I mean, it is perfectly recorded.
It is. And the length of the work to actually, it is sort of a live thing. It's happening, it's in real time.
Yeah.
And you can go through those sort of long labyrinth type of passages without tripping up. It's perfect. You know, it's remarkable for that period.
I don't know whether either of you've got Roy's book, the lyric book, but I was actually looking up.
Yeah, we do.
I was looking up Magoon Blues the other day, and it said in there that he did it in one take, and there was this whole bunch of musicians sat there, and at one point somebody cocked something up, dropped something or whatever, and they nearly lost the plot altogether, and it's really hard. You know, you're recording a 20-minute piece of music. It's
exactly.
Not easy.
Not easy at all. No, it's a wonderful, wonderful accomplishment.
Okay, so that's really from the technical point of view. I mean, is there anything is there any specific songs, lyrics or styles that make you excited?
Well, speaking for me, of course, we've been talking about Stormcock. And some of that stuff, I think, borders on punk-style aggression.
That's interesting.
In the way he attacks the guitar in a couple of the passages in the way the building of those songs. And I suppose I'm also a sucker for the longer pieces. Well, I love the Lord's Prayer off Life Mask. That's extraordinary, absolutely extraordinary atmosphere. And One of Those Days, of course, is really good. The Game off HQ, and HQ itself, I think, is a very powerful album. And of the more contemporary ones, I really like The Green Man. I've got to vote for The Green Man for a recent favourite. I think the title song is wonderful. And considering it's a solo guitar piece, really, there's no backing in it. That's just Roy on the six-string guitar, and it's just perfect. And the Monster's really good. And
it is.
Another track that is not often mentioned that I really like on the Green Man album is All in All, final song.
Okay.
Absolute beauty. And just in conclusion on the favourite pieces, I've got to put in a vote for Beyond the Door. DVD, and if you can hook that up to your speakers, this is just a tip for everybody, the sound on that is just splendid. The fidelity of the sound on that DVD is just beautiful.
It's interesting you mention that, because that seems to I get the impression that's being a bit overlooked by people, and it's a DVD, but you also get an audio CD with it as well. And I posted a message to the website after Clonakilty this year, because I got kind of depressed when I came home and thought, you know, I'm not going to see the old bugger for a while. And I put on the audio CD from there, and it was stunning. And I'd only listened to it once before, I think. And I thought, well, why don't I listen to this more often?
That's right. Well, I've had it in the car for some time now. You know, I get the best of both worlds. Go home and watch it, and then have it. I'm on the road quite a bit in the work I do, and it's a fair 5 or 6 hour trip down from where I live to Sydney, and it's great to pass the time if the cricket's not on. So it gets a fair airing anyway. No, it's good stuff.
Luckily for you, I don't like cricket. Otherwise, we'd probably get diverted by cricket for about half an hour. But I have to ask you this: you've touched on the idea of long songs and so on, and I, as you may know from things I've said before, I quite like sort of what is called progressive music, and I always maintain that some of Roy's stuff fits into the progressive category, which means it's complex music. It's got a certain kind of structure to it that's sympathetic with maybe classical music, I don't know. Longer songs, lots of themes, you know, possibly a bit pompous. Any opinion?
I'm a prog fan from way back, really.
Yeah.
I saw Yes when they came to Australia in 73 and went both nights. I dragged a new girlfriend the first night, who I ultimately married and had my son Tim with. It was our second date. We went to see Yes. And the following night I went with my sister, and Close to the Edge had just come out. not long before, and they did the whole lot of Close to the Edge. And really, you know, if you're not very patient with music, you're going to walk out on that one.
Yeah.
but they were superb. They were a real experience. Yes, they put on a fabulous show. The only sad thing for me is Bruford had left the band.
Oh, yeah, he's a wonderful drummer. So,
and I've still never seen Bruford, and he's a favourite drummer of mine. He's superb. And I've never seen Crimzo, and I love all the Crimson stuff, and particularly Lizard and Lark's Tongues would be my two favourite, and Red.
Yeah, Red's great.
Mm. Yeah, enormous album. And Genesis, Foxtrot's a great favourite of mine.
And mine.
Proper Genesis you're talking about, which is...
The real stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So, now, I mean, I see the reason why people call it pompous, but it's... Yeah. Incredibly ambitious music for rock players, you know, considering the attitude that, for example, my father had when I was a kid was turn that racket off.
Yeah.
And you consider that rock musicians who've and blues musicians and jazz musos before them who had sometimes dubious reputations, but particularly rock musicians, were never really given all that much airtime by the parents of my generation. And the prog stuff is just so ambitious. It's extraordinary. And I'm still buying the stuff. There was a great compilation that was put out with one of the magazines. I think it might have been Mojo. And it was called Acid Days.
Oh, Acid Days. Oh,
I've got that.
Yes. That's right.
Yeah.
That was fantastic.
Absolutely superb. My White Bicycle,
yeah.
Oh, just beautiful. Beautiful stuff. So, yeah, we're into it, Paul.
Oh, yeah, keep it coming.
I mean,
yeah.
you just said something which was really interesting, which was being patient with music. And I think that's actually an interesting thing to consider with Roy's stuff, because I don't know whether you still try and make people listen to it and see if they like it, but the number of people that listen and think, oh, don't like this, don't like the voice, don't like the songs, and you have to give music a chance. And I find that the music that strikes me, that stays with me the best, and, you know, that I still like 20 years after I first listened to it, is the stuff that initially challenged the heck out of me and made me think and was unusual and just wasn't a run-of-the-mill 3-minute pop song. And I think that's where I'm coming from with the prog thing, really. Roy is challenging, and a lot of the songs are challenging, both in the lyrical content but also in the musical structure and so on.
Oh, I think one of the beauties of being in that small room in DeBarra's for me was to actually watch his right hand work properly. Mm-hmm. Being so far away from him in the past, you sort of sat there and got this cavernous, this sound emanating from him, and you just wondered, where the hell is it all coming from? But now I realise what the sort of right hand technique he's got.
Right.
It's quartz clock stuff. He's got an elbow with a lump of quartz in there, I swear, because it's amazing, the timekeeping in there. And then he's got this random picking style where he can choose pairs of strings or three or one. So he's got a trillion combinations of strings he can pluck at the same, whilst keeping a metronome happening in his elbow.
Mm.
And then you throw tunings into it, and, well, the whole universal music thing happens. But you just, as I say, you need sort of patience and thought to get your wrap your head around it. It's very high, very harmonious. You know, it really is.
I know you're quite a decent guitar player, Steve, and as a complete rank amateur, I have to say I've never managed to get to the point where it becomes automatic. And I think that's what you're talking about in terms of the metronome and so on. You, at some point, your hands take on memory. I've noticed it with other things.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's right. And that's a beautiful place to be when it happens.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned DeBarra, so I think it's time we got on to talking about Clonakilty. Now, the pair of you came in 2006, and in that year I made up some little silly name badges because I thought it'd be nice to try and, you know, get people to know who each other were, and so I got to know that you were both coming over from Australia, and we met at Clonakilty and had a great time, and I think it shows either amazing dedication or complete foolishness to try and make it across the world for that week. So I'd really like to know how you got inspired to do it and how it all came together for you. I think it's quite remarkable.
For myself, I'd actually travelled to the UK and Ireland quite a bit before Clonakilty 206. I'd started in 84, and I included Cropperty in 84. So I'd been to Fairport's festivals several times. I've been to about half a dozen of them. And so I knew what to expect in terms of the duration of the trip. And for people who obviously heard about it, it's you can't do it in any less than 23 hours.
Yeah.
And it's punishing. It's the most punishing single or two-stage flight in the world, I think, Sydney to London or Sydney to Paris, wherever over there. And you can't get directly from Sydney to Ireland. You've obviously got to change. And as Steve, I remember saying to me, it was like a minor military operation, us getting to Clonakilty, because we also wanted to include a cheap fare, so we took on Ryanair.
Oh, and, God, don't talk to me about that.
And I'm sure there's a lot of experiences and probably 90%+ negative of travellers with Ryanair. And the cheap fares can come back and blow up in your face if you've got too much luggage. Yeah. You know, when you get slugged €75 for excess baggage, as Mary and I did in France one time, there goes your £5 fare.
Yeah.
So I'd done Cropperty quite a few times, and I'd actually been to Ireland 6 times before going over there in 06. And so I thought, honestly, that I had pretty much done Ireland. However, the incentive of seeing Roy, when Steve said, well, we've got to go, and the thing that really swung it was the fact that Nick was playing with him.
Oh, exactly. Right, yeah, of course.
And I had seen Roy and Nick in 94 at Cropperty on the Saturday night. They only did 2 songs, and I was very impressed with Nick's playing.
Yeah.
And he really struck me as something special. And Roy sang Cricketer that night, and because I was
there. I was there as well.
Were you?
And I remember that when Roy did his solo stuff the day before, he spent most of the time tuning up. It was.
That's right.
I think he was really nervous.
And That's right.
You know, as a Harper fan, I wanted the whole field to really get into him, and you know, it didn't quite work out. But then the next night, when they did the whole Cricketer thing, that really worked.
Yeah. So that was really lovely. So it didn't take much persuasion by Steve to get me to go over there, but it was talking the other halves into accepting the fact that we were going to go away on a holiday all the way to Ireland together.
With credit cards.
And it's funny that it wasn't so much the monstrous size of the trip.
Yeah.
It was actually approaching She Must Be Obeyed to say, look, we're really thinking of going away. But, you know, they were both so supportive, and they said, you get on well together, you like the same sort of music, and you know what sort of thing you're going to be in for. We're not first-time travellers.
No.
And so,
we don't play up anyway.
Well, that's true. No. Yeah. Very conservative, really.
Yes.
And,
well, that's right. Apart from a slight diversion to St Peter's Brewery in Suffolk, that was only a side issue at the time. And Ryanair weren't impressed with the 2 cartons of beer we were trying to get into Ireland either. But we enjoyed those.
Yeah, that worked. It worked a treat.
Okay, I'll cut the interview short there, but you can hear the rest of Pete and Steve's escapades, beer-related or otherwise, next month, and I can assure you it certainly is worth it. A quick music break now, and I'm going to play All in All, which is the final track on the Green Man album.
There's a song that I've been singing for much longer than I know, about a crazy woman and a place where we can grow. circle in the sunrise. A moment in the peace to feel the season come and go. Where there is all in all, where there is all in all. We are the kindred spirit, the guardians of the swarm. The winds are always warm, and howling with a whisper that we are the beginning of the eye inside the storm. Where there is all. Gathering the wisdom from seeds of the unrest, moving to the rhythm of earth and moon possessed, of every feeling being, dances on the edge of aeons. Moments in the quest. Where there is all in all. Where there is all in all. There is no blame, creed, only a dream that everybody always had. That there is all in all. That there is all in all. That there is all in all.
That was All in All, which is the final track from the Green Man album. Green Man is an album which divided fans a little bit when it first came out, and I know there are one or two people that are quite vocal in the Stormcock community that don't really like it very much, and there are others that really do. And I'm hoping that we'll be able to get a bit of debate going at some point in the near future about that album. Next up is the A to Z of Harper. Now, I did originally plan to feature Come Out Fighting Genghis Smith, the album, for this segment, and indeed then concentrate on the track Circle. But at the last minute, I changed my mind because it was noticed on the Stormcock reissue by one or two people that hadn't heard it before that there's some acoustic guitar that plays between One Man Rock and Roll Band and Me and My Woman on side two. Side two of the vinyl. Doesn't really make any difference for the CD. Tracks three and four, if you insist. And in fact, it seems to be an excerpt from a track called Che, which eventually came out on 1974's Valentine album. And it's an instrumental track which Roy wrote as a kind of tribute to Che Guevara. Actually, that backing track has always been there on the Stonecock album. I think it's just that people haven't picked up on it. Perhaps it was less prevalent in the mix on the old CD, or perhaps people had crappier hi-fi equipment. But anyway, here is the track itself. Okay, so it isn't strictly speaking an instrumental. There is one lyric in there, which is, "What more can you give?" And in Roy's lyric book, in brackets afterwards, "than your life." The next segment is listener feedback, and here we have a complete surprise. Yes, I actually have some feedback. In fact, I've got two voicemails. The first is from Mr. Bob Jacobs.
Hi, Paul. It's Bob Jacobs, just ringing to leave my feedback. Congratulations on another excellent podcast. Thoroughly enjoyed it all. Shame you had to break into Lord's Prayer, but I understand why. Congratulations to Nick and Adam for their contributions. All in all, very enjoyable. Cheers.
Thanks very much, Bob. I really appreciate you taking the time to call in, and your message on the voicemail was pretty much similar to the comments I had via email or on the forums and so on. So people seem to like what's going on. Hopefully we can keep up the level of outstanding quality. The next voicemail.
Hi, Paul. Burnham here. Just a quick call to say how much Sue and I enjoy the podcast. Great format. Top work, mate. With regards to reaching a larger listenership, have you thought about putting a MySpace page together specifically for the Roy Harper podcast? it can be a great way to build new listeners, and it might help to direct a few more Roy fans to the downloads. You never know. And can I make a request? How about playing Ladybird sometime, the B-side to the I Still Care single from the Work of Heart album? It's a beautiful song that quite a few people might not have actually heard. Anyway, all power to your elbow, mate. Bye!
Dave and Sue Burnham were actually two of the very first people that I met as a direct result of running what at that time was the Stormcock Internet email mailing list. And, well, we've known each other for a long time now. Thanks very much for calling in, Dave. Now, I did take up your suggestions to heart. I have set up a MySpace page. You can find us at myspace.com/Roy Harper Podcast, imaginatively enough. Actually, it's going pretty well. I've got just over 50 contacts on there, and it's quite neat because I can send out a little bulletin when there's a new issue and so on and so forth. And there seems to be a different kind of crowd on there to Facebook, which is what I've been using up to now. I'm using both. Who knows what will happen in the future with regards to what social network actually wins. The other comment you have was about possibly playing Goodbye Ladybird, which was on the B-side of a single from the Work of Heart era. I have got that single. In fact, it was given to me a few years ago now by Daniel Fascioni as a present. Now, it wasn't in very good condition, I'm afraid, very scratchy and crackly. However, I took it as a challenge, so I've been busy playing with audio restoration software and removing cracks and so on, crackles and so on. So, here we go.
Isn't it time to remember all of the things we forgot? Time to dismember all the things we're not. Time to own up to the truth we can see. Just once before ever parted for real. Goodbye, Ladybird, fare thee well. Love has woken and broken spell. You can be poverty's actress, always on stage. Poor wretched mother, once locked in my cage. I'll be the nasty old bastard who left you for dead. The maniac sexist, unsafe in the head. Goodbye, Ladybird, fare thee well. Love has woken and broken the spell. Just a split second, we made as the earth. The shape of our world of joyful rebirth. Goodbye, Ladybird, fare thee well. Love has woken and broken spell. Oh.
I've always thought that was a really pretty track, and I wish it was available on the CD somewhere. So, Roy, if you ever do consider doing some kind of mopping up of loose ends CD, or you've got a chance to stick it on as a bonus track, I know you don't like bonus tracks very much, but nevertheless, that lovely track needs to be out there, I think. Right, well, we're nearly at the end of the show for this month. I'd like to say, first of all, that if you do want to send me feedback and you don't have a way of recording MP3s, you can call me on a plain old telephone on 020 8816 7706 or +44 if you're not in the UK, 20 8816 7706. Or you can email me at podcast@stallcock.net, either with a plain text or with an MP3 if you've got the ability to make one of those, and I'd be happy to play it or read it out on the programme. Now, the legal stuff. The music that I've used on this programme is all under by permission, and Roy has given his very kind permission to play his recordings on this podcast, so thank you once again, Roy. The legal stuff. This podcast is issued under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 2.0 UK, England and Wales licence, which means that you can give it to other people, but you can't modify it in any way or claim that it's your work. The Roy Harper music in this podcast is used by kind permission of Science Friction Limited and is not for copying or redistribution. You can find full information about the music that was played on this podcast, about the people that participated in the interview, and other matters at the podcast show notes, which you'll find at my blog. My blog lives at stormcock.net, which is the home site for this podcast, and at that site you can find a whole variety of other Harper fans and forums, blogs, chat rooms, all sorts of stuff. It can keep you amused for hours. That's also a gateway to joining the old technology email version of the list, if some of you prefer that kind of way of working. So we've got both old and new technologies. You can take your pick, basically, or do both if you're committed enough. Now, to finish the podcast, I just want one long track, and it's going to be another track from Stormcock, but not one of the performances on Stormcock. It's going to be Me and My Woman, and I've chosen the performance at the Royal Albert Hall gig, Roy's 60th birthday. At that event, he had David Bedford helping out with a full selection of strings, and I think the rendition of Me and My Woman on that particular concert was beautiful. So here's Me and My Woman, and that's it for this month. Hope you enjoyed yourself, and I'll talk to you next time. Bye.
This is a song about our place in the scheme. It's a question, really. Me and My Woman. Where to? A brief history, or something lasting. I never know what time of day it is, or my battlefield of ideas. But the way she touches and the way it feels must be just how it heals. Ah, but it's got a little better since I let her Sunday. And I never know what time of year it is, sitting on top of the fire. But the robin outside is to hunt and hide. The cold, frosty shire. Ah, but he knows just what goes in between his cold toes and his warm ears. And he's got no disguise in his eyes for as love as she needs. spreads her a shelter. Take the tall skies, as they helter-skelter. She waves my days with a glad face. She fakes and says I'm a hard case. She makes and plays like a bad ace, carrying my ways in a scarred space. And she knows me well.
So near.
taken my place. On the plains of the morning that I just could not face. Asking you these questions, telling you these lies, enveloping the wrench on the developing disguise. Open to suggestion, but I'm closed to all my eyes. I'm dead on arrival, right where I stand. I'm dead on arrival, right where I stand. I'm dead on arrival, right where I stand. It's just an ashtray. Flesh is my best wheel. The atmosphere's my highway, and the landscape's my next meal. I need my own propriety, and I'm trying to fix the deal. I'm dead on arrival, right where I stand. I'm dead on arrival, right where I stand. She moves through the dawn fanfare. The dew leaves the bruise and the magic air. I feel a finger running through my nightmares there. Feel nose together with my nowhere stare. And you know me well.
Amy Bedford, Nick Harper, and the Spring. We'll see you.